The Maria Sanchez Show, a conversation, not a confrontation. On MariaSanchezShow.com.
Hi, this is Maria Sanchez, and welcome to the Maria Sanchez Show. Thank you so much for joining us. Our program is fairly eclectic. We like to focus on current events, lifestyle, health, relationships, newsmakers, trends, and today's program is no exception. We have Dr. Chuck and Joanne, Dr. Joanne Bird with us. Chuck is a registered mental health counselor, a registered nurse, board-certified clinical sexologist, life coach, and relationship counselor. Joanne is a licensed mental health counselor, certified cognitive behavioral therapist, board-certified clinical sexologist, hypnotherapist, national certified counselor, life coach, and relationship counselor. So between the two of you, you've covered the entire universe, it seems. Good. Hello, and welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Yes, we have.
Thank you so much for joining us. So of particular note, I have folks in my life. I have a niece. I've got a girlfriend. I have another girlfriend who have some of these titles that you have. But the one that jumps out is the certified clinical sexologist. Can you tell us what does that mean? And what is it that you do in that capacity?
Sure. It can be a little bit complicated because people confuse sexologist with sex therapist. And I'll try my best to kind of explain the difference. Because we live in Florida, our situation is a little bit more unique compared to the other states. So basically, a clinical sexologist is really anybody that has studied human sexuality, okay? So a sexologist is the study of human sexuality. And so really, a sexologist can be a researcher, it can be an educator. We even know a colleague that's a sociologist who's a sexologist. So it can come, in fact, even anthropologists can be a sexologist. But because we are also licensed mental health counselors in the state of Florida, that allows us, because of our training and supervision and the PhD, that allows us to be a sex therapist in Florida.
And what's the difference between a sex therapist and a sexologist?
Well, like I was saying, a sexologist, depending on what discipline that person is coming from, so if they're an anthropologist and they're also a sexologist, they would probably be focused on, you know, the anthropology part of sexuality. But because we're therapists and sexologists, we're able to do the therapy piece of it.
So what type of individual, patient, client would you see or do you see? Who comes to you for what?
Well, we actually, since we're a husband-wife team, we actually work together as a couple, and we see relationship, you know, couples together in the room. So it's not like you have one therapist seeing the couple. It's both of us in there. And kind of gives you a unique perspective because it's one, it's male, female, and two, we're a married couple actually living this.
Right. And we also do see individuals as well.
And what would be the reason that someone would come to you? Perhaps a common malady or issue?
Sure. Now, when it comes to couples, we get couples that come in. The most common thing that we see is what's called uneven sexual desire, where one person has a higher sex drive than the other person does. That's very common. And we typically see other couples if their one partner is struggling with a sexual dysfunction, like erectile dysfunction or rapid ejaculation or female orgasmic disorder, things of that nature.
And why would they not see a medical doctor if it's a physical malady?
Typically, they do. In fact, we get many, many referrals come to us. They've gone to their gynecologist, they've gone to their urologist already, and they've had that medical piece ruled out. So it's not a hormone issue. It's not something related to medications. And by the way, if they haven't come that direction, we typically send them there to make sure there's nothing medically causing the issue. And then once that's been taken care of, then we'll work with them on the psychological aspect that could be causing the problem or the relationship.
Or the relationship issue. So I was, as you were discerning to me what it is that brings people to you, I was thinking about how important the brain is with regards to our sexual functioning. And you probably know that better than most.
Absolutely. I think majority of sexuality is having to do with the brain. Absolutely.
Well, and also a lot of times when somebody does have a medical condition causing, you know, them to have issues with sexuality, we also have to work with them on the brain so that we can get them back being sexual.
Right.
You know, because it takes a lot of brain power to do that as well.
Absolutely.
Now, my experience, not as a professional, but as a single woman on the planet, has been that with the medications that people are taking, especially to augment their depression, that prevents most of the men that I've been with intimately, they can't achieve an orgasm.
That's very common. Absolutely. A lot of the SSRIs, which are antidepressants, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, one of the side effects is affecting desire and the ability sometimes to achieve an orgasm. Absolutely. It affects the sensitivity. And so what we do is we talk to them about, you know, how they can psychologically work on their desire through sexual fantasies and things of that nature. And also some of them, especially if sensitivity has become an issue, that's when we talk about the use, if they've never used one, of using a vibrator, because it has a little bit more intensity, which sometimes helps.
So do you, the two of you, here you're married and you have similar educational backgrounds, and then you're in practice together. Do you have alone time or time away? How do you juggle that personally?
Well, during the day, I work as a registered nurse still. So I go to that job during the day, do the counseling at night. And Joanne does her teaching. She teaches community college during the day as well. So we do have our alone time.
And then when we get home, we have our quality time. One of the things, I'm always amazed at people that have children. I don't know how they do all of the stuff that they do, but we do not have kids. So I think that helps us have our downtime together.
Yeah, I was just having a chat yesterday with a gal, and as her stories unfold, I said to her, it sounds to me like you don't take any time for the couple. And she said, we don't. And I said, don't you feel the need just to be the husband and wife? And she goes, no, we enjoy our son so much. And I thought, ooh, that sounds, that to me could be a recipe if people, I mean, I was raised, my folks, the couple was primary. That was evident and still is. We children were second. And so their marriage has, and they'll be married 60 years in January. Their marriage always trumped everything. Not that we were, you know, neglected or abandoned or anything like that, but it was very evident to me growing up that it was about them.
Yeah, it was the couple that started the whole thing. I believe the couple is the foundation. And that's one of the things we do see is, you know, they're so focused on the kids. They're focused on work, they're focusing on everything else. But what happens when the kids aren't there, because they will leave the nest eventually. And now it's going to be potentially two strangers looking across from each other and not knowing who they are. Mm-hmm. And what, you know, what does that do for the relationship? So we often see that as well. How do they reconnect? So I agree with what your parents did. That's great.
And then here's another thing that I've seen and heard a lot of is couples who don't have sex for years. Mm-hmm. And my question always is, and usually I hear it from the man, oh yeah, we didn't have sex for the last 8 years. In fact, I have a girlfriend. She said she didn't have sex for 20 years. And I said, when does a day become a week, become a month, become a year? How does that happen?
I think, like you're saying, they are so focused on everything else that they're not making their relationship, let alone their sex life, a priority. And that's the problem. That's the problem.
And now I know there's plenty of folks out there that do the separate bedroom things, either because there's insomnia or they're snoring or different schedules or something like that. So I can see how that would be a little bit easier to not have, be intimate. But if you're in the same bed together night after night after night, or, you know, day after day after day, you're occupying the same oxygen. Is it because there was an issue and then there's resentment and then someone doesn't want to reach out and someone figures if they don't want, then I'm not, or, I mean, I just don't, understand how you can think that a relationship is going to thrive, let alone survive, unless you're intimate.
Absolutely. And to your point, I think what's happening too is you're seeing a lot of bedrooms becoming office space. So people are in close proximity while they're sleeping next to each other, but they're really not paying attention to each other. They're on their phones, their iPads, they're watching TV, they're doing those kinds of things, which are, again, distractors away from the couple just having quality time together. Absolutely.
And that's I would imagine, I've never had a TV in the bedroom. I'm not a TV person in general, but it's like, yeah, I suppose you could always just doze off every night because there's that distraction there. And the phones too. I turn my phone off every night and put it in another room before I go to sleep. And people are like, you've got four children. How can you do that? And I said, because I like my sleep.
There you go.
That's true.
You make a priority.
Yeah. And I used to, when my daughter was in high school, I would take the phone from her at 9 o'clock at night and put it in my room to turn it off and charge it. And when she went to college, her friends told her that that was child abuse.
Oh, gosh. See?
Oh, geez.
Wow. Yeah. We've come a long
that
way.
I had separated her from her, you know, device, because she used to fall asleep with it in her hand. And if somebody would text her, she'd wake up and she'd reply. I was like, no, that's not what we do. We're not connected 24/7.
Absolutely. No. And I think many people are, and they have a hard time setting boundaries. I see that as being a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So traditionally, the generalization is that men want sex more often than women, and that women aren't as responsive sexually as men, and they don't think about it as often and all that sort of thing. And I haven't found that to be the case in my life. So I'm curious what it is like for you today, professionally. Is it predominantly the man wants sex more and the woman is there begrudgingly, or what do you see?
We see that more, although we do have, I would say, about maybe 20 to 30% of the cases where it's that uneven sexual desire. I'd say 20 to 30% are probably the women are wanting it more than the guys are. Yep.
And that has interesting ramifications because of the macho thing and the testosterone and stuff like that, I would imagine. An ego.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's speak a little bit about the female orgasmic disorder.
Sure.
How prevalent is that?
I would say, I don't know what the recent statistics are off the top of my head, but I do see that, we do see that quite a bit in our office. And I think a lot of times it's, they're not, they don't really know what to expect. So sometimes they are not sure whether or not they've had an orgasm. And after talking to them, they're like, oh yeah, then I have had an orgasm. But when they see magazines talk about the big O, you know, this big with fireworks, and sometimes it's not that. Sometimes it's just a little bleep, you know, a little filled up in a relaxation after. So sometimes it's that, and sometimes it's because, you know, everything has been so focused on the guy, you know, pleasing the guy, that they don't even think about their own pleasure. That's one of the things that I am very passionate about as a female sex therapist, is helping women realize that sex can be for them and they have a right to receive pleasure as well. And so helping them with that is wonderful.
So why would that even be a concept? Is it because women are caretakers and in general think of others first?
Absolutely. And it's funny, you know, you even hear people, if you go into like a Victoria's Secrets or Fredericks of Hollywood or a lingerie store, and you'll hear some of the women, you know, I wonder if he'll like this. And I wonder if, you know, everything is so focused on it. I wonder what's going to please him. And sometimes I'd love to just interrupt and go, excuse, what about what makes you feel sexy?
Right.
You know, what turns you on? And that to me is a mindset shift. And I do think it's like you said, it's because we're so focused on pleasing them. And I do think women sometimes also, another key to it is, I think, you know, hearing women talk, they don't give themselves permission to receive pleasure, to slow down enough to receive pleasure. They'd rather just get through.
And a lot of times we often hear, you know, they've got everything on their to-do list, you know, check this, check this, check this, and sex is the last thing. You know, and the guy, that seems like that's all he's thinking about. But we've heard this before, that, you know, a woman is like a Windows operating system, where she's, all her windows are up. And until those windows are down, sex isn't going to be thought of. Mm-hmm. I can put the screensaver on and be good.
And have sex. Right. And then go back. Yeah.
Right. And not be multitasking or thinking about what's now what, what's next, what else can I check off on the list. So, tell me about sex addiction. Do you see that much?
Yes, we do. And, you know, there's a debate out in the field between, is it sex addiction or is it...
Sex compulsivity. Yeah.
Right. And I say, let's stop fighting about what it's called. Let's just help them.
Let's just treat it.
But it is out there. And it's increased because of the computer, because it's like you can just click, 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 click.
From porn to porn to porn.
And it can get more increasingly, you know, worse and worse porn. And it's like, okay, because our feeling is porn is not necessarily bad. It's right. Just like anything else. If it's used in moderation, if it's used, you know, with your partner, you know, as a tool, that's fine. But when it's used in secrecy, or it starts, you know, affecting your relationship, then it definitely becomes a problem.
And what I've heard, especially about men, is that it's difficult for normal people to compete with what you're shown as.
My wife says I have a sex addiction, and not necessarily. And often we see that when they've had affairs. That just because you've had an affair doesn't mean you're a sex addict. In fact, those cases, there's only like 3% of the population that have a true addiction or compulsive sexual behavior. Problem. Yeah.
And what about affairs? How prevalent is that with sexual dysfunction?
I think it's quite common. In other words, most people, they don't, if there is a sexual issue, for example, if somebody doesn't have a desire or low sexual desire for sex, or there's some kind of issue that they're avoiding, we see sometimes, especially if there's other relationship issues, you see sometimes where people are like, okay, I feel like my need isn't getting met. And so they're looking outside of the relationship to do that.
Rather than solve it, the issue within the relationship.
Absolutely. You know, sex is a very, very difficult thing for our culture to talk about. It's ironic because people are having sex out there, but to actually sit down and talk about it with each other, that's what's difficult.
And I heard this week, actually, that the largest population that is getting divorced is like 60 to 65. And they say that the issue is either that we're living longer and they're going, I'm not going to live like this anymore, or that the men are taking Viagra and the women are like, nope, done that, been there. But we can have sex later in life, unlike what we were raised to think or believe, that once women went through menopause, that was basically the end of their sexuality.
No, and to me, that can just be the beginning. And that's, we adore it. You know, here living here in Florida, there's a large senior population, and we get a lot of people that are, you know, 60s, 70s coming in, and we love it because these are the couples, you know, they're going to stay together forever. They love each other. Their kids are out of their home, and they're like, they come in to see a sexologist. There's really not maybe an issue or a sexual dysfunction, and they just want to know, okay, you know, we've had that procreation type sex. We want to know what else is on the menu. You know, and they're hungry for it. And we just love working with them because you see their eyes light up and they're getting real healthy sex education for the first time in their life.
That must be so refreshing to have patients like that. It's not about what's wrong. It's about what's available.
Oh, I love it. And they come in every week. We give them home assignments. Nothing is done in the office. Florida is very, very strict on that. So nothing is done in the office. You should see them every week. They come in, they're all excited. What else do you have for us?
How cute.
Yeah. I love it.
Well, I know in my life that once my children were grown and sleeping through the night, and then especially as they went off to college, that was like a license for me to not have to worry about, you know, somebody knocking on the door or somebody hearing anything or, you know, varying degrees of nakedness or what have you. It was like, woohoo. Bring it on. Opportunity. So if we're going to post your contact information, when we publish this. Is there anything else that you'd like to add? I've really enjoyed our conversation, and thank you for taking the time to be available.
I think the only thing that we always like to add is to remember that sex is adult play. It needs to be fun, and I wish people would stop focusing so much on functionality and performance and focus on the pleasure. And sometimes just by doing that, it kind of helps the other stuff. That's for sure.
And then also, too, especially when there's love involved or commitment or what have you, that to me, it's just a further exploration of differing degrees of dimensions of the relationship.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So thank you so much for having us on.
Yes.
You're welcome. Thank you, Dr. Chuck and Dr. Joanne Bird, for your time. And this is Maria Sanchez, hoping you're helping to make this world a better place. Thank you for listening.
Killer. You won't believe it, darling. There's long-time listeners.